Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh,
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Iverson against Gil. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? What up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name's Nick Engvall. And I'm here with my guys, Robbie and Mike, to talk some sneakers. What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Good, man. How y'all doing today?
I'm doing fantastically.
Yeah, I can't complain. I can't complain.
I'm just over here doing some self-gratification and reading my post on sneaker history about one of our topics today. So if you haven't visited the website, be sure to go read some stories by myself and Mike.
Yeah.
Check us out.
Going to get into some retros Please that we want to see come back. Or I guess some, it's not even retros, right? It'd just be stuff that we want to see retros, since some of this stuff has like never come out. But we'll get
how
to
they're not.
Yeah, exactly. But before we get into that, I wanted to switch it up. Usually we shout out people for leaving us a review, on iTunes, which we appreciate anybody that takes the time to do that. But today I wanted to shout out 801 Sneaks on Instagram, just for the message that he sent over to, you know, he just basically said that, you know, he's been listening to the podcast and, you know, just, we want to kind of inspire and help people go after what they want in the sneaker world. And I think that, you know, this is one of those situations where he hit us up and basically said, you know, listen to the podcast and feeling motivated about it. And that's is literally exactly what we want to create with this podcast. So hopefully it's a little bit different from kind of the other stuff that you're out there listening to, and nothing against that kind of stuff, but we want to try to stay positive with it. And I don't know, what was the words that you used to describe it, Robbie?
Pulling up as you get that beautiful intro to it, it's coming up right now.
I think Robbie called it, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Here's the direct message. I listened to your guys' podcast from July 9th, and you guys inspired me so much and gave me some direction. I've always wanted to be involved with sneakers and always looked at it as a hobby. I recently had the opportunity fall in my lap where I was able to buy over 1,200 retro vintage sneakers, and I'm starting to design shirts and try to expand, make connections, and see where this can take me. So that episode from the 9th helped me more than you can realize, and maybe my dreams can come true. So thank you very much. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's so super dope.
That makes me happy hearing that.
Yeah, so if you got a chance, give 801 Sneaks on Instagram a follow and be on the lookout for those pairs, because I'm sure 1,200 pairs, that's got to be something good for everybody in that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So news-wise, I don't know. There's lots of kind of stuff going on, but the thing that stuck out to me, I mean, get into the more hyped-up release stuff, but I think one of the most interesting things was the recent, you know, Jaden Smith and New Balance partnership that was announced. So I think Jaden Smith is low-key like one of the, like, he's going to be one of the huge creators in the next 20-30 years, in my opinion. But interesting that he decided to team up with New Balance. What do you guys think?
Dude, I mean, right, yeah. I think you're right on the money when you say that about he's going to be one of the like the next big creators in the next years. I think, I mean, he's one of the guys bringing creativity back to not only the rap game, but just in art in general within the pop culture. So I think it's a smart move for him because I think New Balance, especially the way they're taking the whole Kawhi deal, I think they're opening up way more creativity, and he's the perfect guy to, you know, inject some of that extra energy into the brand. So I think it's a good move.
I'm a huge Jaden Smith fan. His albums are great. I love to put his music on in the car and not tell anybody who it is. And they always ask, like, what the hell is this? Like, they can't tell if it's, like, you can obviously tell it's new, but there's nobody else sounds like him and nobody else looks like him. And he's normally dressed up in a lot of like Louis Vuitton, Gucci sneakers. So he'll be able to take like a high end style, mix that with a really alternative style, a little bit of hip hop styling, and maybe bring some really cool ideas to New Balance. So I'm 1,000% behind it.
Yeah, I think seeing the first photos or whatever of the campaign, he's wearing like the 997H and the 997 Sport, which are kind of like New Balance's like stepping stones into the like the super high quality made in the USA stuff. But the colors that they've been putting on those shoes have been fire ever since almost every pair has been a really good looking colorway to me. I mean, the 997 is one of my favorite shoes to begin with, but the fact that they're making it, you know, basically half the price, and the quality is pretty nice on them for, you know, for that price. You would expect it to be a lot less, but it has, you know, $90. It's a really good shoe for $90.
Very true. Did you buy a pair of those recently also?
Yeah. I mean, I just bought like a pair of customs. I actually have bought like two or three pair of 997s in the last like maybe 2-3 weeks, just because the shoes, to me, they're just like an easy wearable shoe. And I'm finding that I think about what I'm going to wear less with those shoes. I don't know why, but they just become like a default choice for me. But yeah, definitely highly suggested if you haven't tried it out. And for $90, I mean, there's some super dope colorways, especially like even the stuff that Jaden's wearing, right? Like the teal and pink and white, just like it's a good like summer looking shoe.
What's cool about those is that those are the colors they're putting on those 997s with either one of those midsole choices you can get now with the Sport, and I don't remember the other one. But the colors are so good. They don't look like just general releases. They look like they could possibly be, something collaborated with something else. If they've done so well with the way to put the blocking together.
Yeah.
It's not to buy that many New Balances in a 2-3 week, time frame. So you don't have to buy that many, listeners. We'll check the pair out.
Yeah, don't ever look at my like sneaker consumption as an example, because there's nothing good about it. As much as like I enjoy posting the shoes, it's always problematic to have as many shoes as I've had. So I'm not a good example. But one of these, go find a pair you like, check it out, let us know what you think of it. But I guess shift into the other kind of, I don't know, news stuff. So we kind of had like two really crazy, chaotic releases this past week. And one was the Arizona Iced Tea Adidas stuff that was supposedly selling shoes for 99 cents or whatever in New York. And then all the releases at ComplexCon, Fear of God, where you're using the sneakers app to go find the locations and pick up the shoes. And I didn't really get a chance to see officially if the Atmos Air Max 1 released at ComplexCon. But from what I saw on all of social for both of those releases, it just made me like realize that I don't want to deal with any of that stuff to try to buy a pair of shoes.
And you mean cost? ComplexCon, but it's hard to buy shoes.
What?
I mean, it's one of those things where like, I really, really love these kind of events because I love meeting people in person. And if you've ever met me in person, like I talk way too much. I get super excited to hear people's stories. And like, we could spend an hour or two talking about just nothing at all. Right. It's like the sneaker version of Seinfeld. That's me in person. And you just like have no aim for the conversation, but I just get excited because people are passionate about it. And I love hearing that and sharing that passion with people. But what's really crazy is just how these, like, you know, in theory, these are cool events and you want to be able to go and have that experience and, you know, and enjoy it. But it's really weird that the consumer side of these events, whether that's ComplexCon or these special releases or, you know, I mean, they did the same thing with like Fear of Gods here in LA, where it's like people are out, you know, using the AR on their sneakers app to, you know, buy shoes. And I think that's super dope, but then it ends up being so chaotic and so many people, you know, you can only have so many people in one location. And if you're trying to sell, let's say, an Arizona Iced Tea Adidas out of a bodega, it's just not feasible, right? It's really interesting to see like kind of how repeatedly this kind of stuff is attempted and then gets shut down. And it bums me out in one way because I love these types of things and I love the creativity that goes into it. And, you know, how cool would it be to walk into a, you know, a little corner store and open up the cooler section and be able to pull a pair of kicks out and check out, you know, like that's super dope. But I also am worried that this trend of doing these things is only going to get more and more focused and hyper localized, where it's only going to happen in, you know, big cities or, you know, yeah, the major markets like New York and LA, maybe Chicago. And that's really unfortunate for the rest of the people that are into sneakers that are out there that, you know, not too many people can afford to go to ComplexCon, pay, you know, whatever it was, hundreds or thousands of dollars to be a VIP, unless they're flipping shoes to cover that or flipping product to cover that trip. And now you have all these people that waited in VIP to get the product and all these issues. And it's just sad to see the other side of it. And, you know, it happens, right? It's a part of events and it's a part of this kind of hype machine that has become the sneaker world for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. But did you guys see much of either of these stories?
Man. Go ahead.
No, you go for it.
No, I was saying that I saw more of the Adidas story more than I saw anything about ComplexCon. And so I saw some videos of the published by like just different news sources of the NYPD shutting down the release. My thought is, you have to know, no matter what brand you are, if you're releasing a shoe and you're a recognizable brand for 99 cents, you can't put enough like structure in place to keep it organized. There's no way. They knew that was going to get shut down. At least in my mind, I feel like, you know, it's going to get shut down. You got press. The shoe's going to be 99 cents from retail now. I haven't seen it on the retail market, but I feel like the job they accomplished what they're looking to do, and that was to build some awareness around the sneaker. And they guarantee they knew they're going to get shut down because you can't tell, especially people in New York who are crazy about sneakers. 99 cents, you get a fresh pair of Adidas. I think there just had to be a plan there.
Dead ass.
Perfect.
But it's like Nick was saying, it's becoming so regionalized or eventalized. That's not a word.
I like it though.
Right? It's just like, I don't have or don't want to spend the money to go somewhere to spend more money and wait in line to then be let down. Like, it's not worth it for me to ever to go to ComplexCon unless somebody's paying for me to be there for the sheer fact of playing the odds. Like, I know there's X amount of shoes. I'm one person. I'm not going to run. I'm not going to push somebody out of the way. Anybody see that video of that one guy pushing his homie in the wheelchair at like Mach 5?
Yeah. I think we all need friends like that guy.
Right? He is hauling. But like, I'm not about that. I'm not trying to push and shove or like knock somebody out of a chair on accident because I need a shoe that bad. It's like never that serious. So it'd be so impactful if there could be like a store pop up or maybe like a Nike town pop up in like a lesser town, if you want to call it a lesser town. But there's just so many opportunities to bring the community together. And it kind of just proves more and more that it's not about bringing the community together at these kind of events. Like you can say it is until you're blue in the face, but at the end of the day, you're trying to sell somebody something. You're trying to get, like, you're trying to build something. There's nothing organic from it. Like, yeah. Booth costs money, shoes cost money, burgers, $15. Like, everything is just, it's Disneyland for sneakers. And that's cool. But, like, I don't want to go to Disneyland. I don't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it's just to kind of play devil's advocate, I think it's really interesting how it's grown the way it has, because it originally was so much more, in my opinion, it was so much more like about the artists, the first ComplexCon two, 3 years ago. You know, it was the first time that really you had kind of, I don't want to say access, but that's the word that comes to mind, like access to somebody like Murakami. Because if you're into sneakers or streetwear, or, you know, collectibles of any kind, you probably know him. Especially, you know, with the work that he's done with Complex over the years and various other, you know, outlets. But, you know, Pharrell was like a headliner the first year and kind of on the ticket as like a curator of sorts, and you had and it just, to me, it seemed like it was more about the festival side of it, and I don't really knock the idea, because I think that this is going to be, you know, repeated and expanded and moved around, and you're going to have, you know, whatever, however many complex cons they can squeeze into a year, or other people doing it, because people want to have more in-person experiences. But the problem is the distraction of selling merch and how crazy that's become. And it's not just in the sneaker space. I think that it's also, you know, it's also go to a concert, right? Like if you want to go see Travis Scott perform, you're trying to buy merch. Like that's a part of the experience, but it's taking away from the creative side of it, in my opinion. And it's also a really fine line, you know, how to balance that is something that I think that Complex is trying to, or, you know, whatever the company is that owns, I can't remember the name of it, but, you know, ComplexCon is kind of run by the Agenda or Magic kind of trade show.
I think it's the guy from Agenda.
Yeah, it's like a lot of the people that have done these like big convention things, right? And there's a huge value in it, as long as, in my opinion, and I think that, you know, this would be my argument to your point, Robbie, is I think you would have a blast if you could go there just to hang out with people, network, talk with people, and not be like tempted to buy product. That's the challenge, right? If you're trying to be buying product at these types of things, remember that you're inevitably missing out on the value of what you get from it. And I think that's the thing that's really interesting about, you know, we're collectively a little bit older than probably most of the demographic that's going to ComplexCon. And I think that younger audience might not think about the things that they're missing out by, you know, lining up for product for 3 hours and waiting in line just to flip something. And to me, that, you know, the dollar amount is not necessarily the trade-off, right?
Yeah. But you know what would be cool? I don't know if it's even feasible. As you were talking, what you said make a lot of sense. The purchases, the limited supply of things kind of overshadows the actual event, the creative of the event. I think it would be cool because I was listening to one guy on YouTube. He was kind of blogging his experience there. He said there's an app that you can buy, like some merch is available there, but you also download the ComplexCon app and you can purchase some of the merch when you're from the app and get sent to your home from the event without having to go stand in line and so on and so forth, as long as it was available. I think they should separate. They should have one portion just for purchases. Like, you should put the purchases somewhere on a complete other side of the building and just have events and installations on the other side. Just completely separate them. And that way you can eliminate some of that, you know, walking around, reselling, things like that. Just you keep that, keep the purchases and the money on one side, but keep the what people come for, the experience on another, because we see people walk around with, you know, holding shoes in the air, because a lot of videos I was watching, you know, people like Nick was saying, trying to flip things immediately after they bought them. Or, you know, herds trying to get the limited shoe that caused things to shut down. I just think they need to separate this, like, same event, but separate the building some kind of way, if that makes any sense, if it was even possible.
Here's my counter to that, Mike. I think, so I'm going to get like a little nostalgic, I guess. So I went to the second, maybe the third year of the Agenda Trade Show down in Huntington Beach. It was super small. This is before they had blown up. And even when I went to Vegas to the trade shows, you know, in like the first year that I went, I was completely intimidated by the fact that it seemed, you know, this is not something back then that people were buying merchandise at the events. You might get free t-shirts or something handed out, but you were going to network. You were going to basically find ways to work together and do creative things, whether that's photography or writing or, you know, video or even just like social media. I mean, I picked up like social media contracts. I did consulting calls. Industry trade shows happen everywhere, right? And they happen across any type of industry that you want to talk about. And if they don't, you should create one, because if you're in an industry that doesn't have a trade show, it's the best way to network with people. And for me, it was a way to, you know, connect with people, find ways to find writing gigs or consulting gigs or photography, whatever it was. What's interesting about those is that they used to be so, like, the first year of me doing that, it was such an intimidating thing. And people don't ever see that. But like, you go into it and you see this entire industry where a huge percentage of the people that are working at these trade shows or attending these trade shows already know each other because they've been working in that business before and they saw each other at the last trade show and they've already done this whole networking thing. And I think that that's a great experience for people to have and learn from, because it forces you to get out of your comfort zone, introduce yourself to people, and really just like figure out where you fit in that space, especially if it's something that you're passionate about. But what's really interesting about the kind of the consumerism aspect of these trade shows now is that you don't have there's two different approaches to it, right? Like, you don't have the people that are going there to network and to try to figure out how to, you know, make an income or, you know, create a partnership or collaboration or whatever that is, because everybody seems to be distracted by this, like, purchasing, you know, product resell life that kind of exists right now. And to like your point, Mike, I wouldn't want to split it up, because I'm a big believer in the storytelling aspect of any kind of product, right? And there's going to be some for every, you know, Fear of God or Atmos or whatever that goes, like the Canary Diamond Dunks from last year or whatever, for every one of those that goes completely haywire and, you know, gets all the buzz on the internet, there's probably, you know, 100 products of smaller companies that actually do get to sell their stuff. And it's not quite as chaotic. I mean, you still got to line up for a majority of the stuff, but in general, like there's much easier ways to go about that. And you still get to, you know, experience the whole kind of presentation, if you will, that comes with, you know, I remember Adidas specifically did like this whole, like, you know, massive build out, and you would go, you know, you just go in. It's just like so over the top that you want that experience of like for instance, last year at the Long Beach Complex Con, and there's probably, I don't know, the line only took me like 20 minutes to go through, but you go in and you have this whole experience of like, you get a key, you get to open a safe. It's the Pusha T stuff. And you end up getting, you know, like, I can't remember, like a t-shirt or, you know, keychain or something. And some that people won the shoes. Sure. And that kind of thing is one of those things where I wouldn't want to take and separate the buying aspect of it. It's just unfortunate that people don't think about the trade-offs of, you know, I look at it and I would encourage everybody that wants to be a part of the sneaker business of any kind or even anything related, right? If you have the opportunity to go to a Complex Con or Sneaker Con, wherever it is, it's worth it. But if you're going to go and think about flipping a pair of shoes to make a couple $100, that's a very small-minded approach. If you went and your goal was to network and get 5 contacts, I guarantee you that one of those contacts could give you more money than whatever that shoe that you want to flip is worth. That's what I think about these trade shows or these conventions that are going on now. And I think if people were to step back and think about that as they're going into it, don't get me wrong. Like I fall for it sometimes too. Like if I had the opportunity to buy those orange Fear of Gods, I would have been all about trying to get it. Would I have traded it for a good conversation with one of the executives at a brand? No, definitely not. But, you know, in the moment, there's the give and take, and that's a part of the game and a part of the fun. And, you know, I don't know, I guess that's a little too far down the tangent, but that's kind of how I feel about the trade show stuff and all the hype that's going on right now.
Yeah, what you say makes sense. And you're right. It's just those stories of like utter madness to get the spotlight. And you're right. I didn't think about like the Pusha T deal with like the keys and the locks, because you didn't really hear about that compared to the other nonsense going on. So no, which is, you know, you make a good point. It's just like those crazy stories make the headlines, and the ones that are actually like tame and people get something from them, like get some actual legitimate excitement and hands on, you know, time with the brands, they get overshadowed by that. So no, what you say makes perfect sense.
Proverb 1 from the Book of Nick.
So the other way that you could avoid, you know, buying into the hype, so to speak, would be to hunt down like old retro product or old shoes that are not as hyped up that never get released. So with that awkward transition, I think we should talk about the shoes we'd like to see retro. Robbie, you want to start us off, Robbie?
Yeah, man. I've been really thinking about shoes that we see all the time come back year after year. Like, we always get an Air More Up Tempo, obviously every Air Jordan ever. And we're now starting to see LeBron come back and Kobe come back, their lines respectively for Nike. So thinking about what shoes haven't been retroed back, and those conversations come up from time to time. And those East Bay catalog screenshots get thrown up and people talk about it for a minute. But I thought about taking it a step further and ranking a couple of them. So my personal pick, like some shoes I really want to see return, the 2K line, the 2K3 kind of started everything. As 2003 started, there's this real push for like more and more different and outside the box designs. And I feel like that whole perforated side panels and just that smooth leather, great Zoom Air, like everything about it was just so cutting edge at the time. And everybody was rocking them, like LeBron, Kobe, Tony Parker. Pretty much if you were a Nike athlete, you were rocking that shoe at that time. So like, that's one of the best, I'd say, like basketball shoes of a specific time that's never come back. Like, we see the 2K4 all the time. That kind of segues to one to talk about later, 2K5. which hasn't ever returned either. But just, you know, those early 2K lines outside of the four, because we've seen that come back three or four different times in the past 15 years. But the other two are at zero. So, Mike, do you have any thoughts about a shoe you haven't seen ever come back?
Yeah, man. So, the shoe that caught my eyes, when we talked about East Bay Magazine, this one of the shoes back in, if I'm not mistaken, like 02, 03 basketball season. Now, every time I got the book, I always wanted this shoe, but they were just always kind of like too expensive at the point of when my, at the point when my foot was always growing. And so it was a shoe that Jason Kidd wore, Kobe wore a couple times. It was the Nike Air Turbine. That was one of my like favorite shoes back in the day that I have yet to see them retro in any form. And also made popular by one B-Rad G from Malibu's Most Wanted.
I mean, I second that. That shoe's super dope. I wouldn't mind seeing it come back. I think there's so many shoes that it's interesting to think about the kind of lineage of when shoes come back and stuff. And the fact that, you know, 2K4s came, but there's so many shoes from that era, like early 2000s, that I look at them and I just think, damn, that shoe has to be expensive to reproduce. And I wonder how much that affects, you know, what people are, or, you know, what Nike is willing to kind of spend and how they can get the money back. Because thinking about how, for me, like the it's probably the mid 90s stuff. I mean, I still would love to see like a really proper, I'd like to see the Lambaste, which is like the low top version of the Go LWP. The first is like 1994 or five, whatever. But the air up, you know, they brought it back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, but it was done in that like vacuum tech finish. So it was all like super like stiff and uncomfortable. And I mean, I still bought them because I wanted the shoes so bad, but they just hurt my feet so bad that I had to like just give them away. But a lot of those shoes from the 90s had a little bit easier tooling, I would say. And then you get into kind of the 2000s, early 2000s, where you had so many of the, you know, Flightposites and stuff like that, that had such a, they had so much unique kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but like, it's like that TPU stuff that adds that much more. It's almost like when they transitioned to Zoom, like full length Zoom stuff, right? There was this kind of over the top design quality that went along with that shift late 90s, early 2000s. And a lot of those shoes, you know, like we obviously got like Flightposites and stuff like that have come back, but there's so many shoes within that I would love to see come back. A lot of the Pippin stuff, the Vroomlicious, I think was one of them, if I remember correct, that had those like stripes on the kind of like wavy stripes on the backside of it. I don't know. I wonder what the like kind of threshold for making a retro is. Is it like we need to, you know, sell this many pairs to cover that cost, or is it, you know, it seems like some shoes are like glorified a little bit more, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of them that are glorified a bit more than others. That's why you see them over and over again. But it's weird though how that works though, because I mean, I feel like the models that we named were very popular in their heyday. Like, they were shoes that you really didn't necessarily see that hit the clearance rack too much. They were definitely definitely able to sell on, you know, the power of the player that they were, who was wearing them, and, you know, the design. So it's kind of weird. I wonder how that process works when they decide to bring these shoes back, because I think they would sell. Each and every one of these sneakers would sell. Maybe not something you put in a mass production, but maybe make a limited run of them just to, you know, save a little cash and get your money that way.
What I think is interesting about it is that a lot of these shoes don't have, like, a marquee moment associated with them. Like, we can think of pictures, or even a lot of the times when I remember shoes with the turbine, and I remember Jason Kidd wearing it, I can't remember what uniform, what color they were. I get more of a feeling about the shoe than I get, like, a clear image in my brain. So none of those shoes have, like, a real iconic moment. We just associate them with iconic players at the time. So, like, maybe they're not being retroed because they're stuck in the minds of people of a very certain age, or, like, you know, time frame. And they really wouldn't click with people the same way they do now, like they did 16, 17 years ago. So that's kind of my take on it. Because I can think of all these PEs Kobe wore during sneaker free agency, and almost none of them come back. Like, we get tapes with, like, the Jordan 3 Kobe. There was that commemorative pack when he retired and never released to the public, but we know it exists.
Yeah.
But just, like, stuff that's so tied to an era or a specific year that just maybe Nike knows that won't speak to the ages. I mean, to the newer ages of people, masses of people.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point, because there's a lot of stuff that didn't have, you know, those moments. And without it, you know, I think we're kind of the exception to the people that remember more than the average consumer. So there's probably plenty of shoes out there that, you know, the average consumer doesn't remember, right? But, like, you know, as you mentioned, like, the, you know, up-tempos, or is it the much up-tempo, more up-tempo? It has a big air on the side, right? More up-tempo?
Yeah.
The more up-tempo is, like, it's, like, super iconic and super poignant to anybody, not just people that were into sneakers, because it had the branding that people could see and recognize, where, you know, I mean, it's been retroed, but something like the Zoom Flight 5 Jason Kidd's is not quite as, it's not quite as poignant for people that weren't fans of him, or, you know, maybe the casual fan of sneakers, which I think that's really interesting to think about. How, I mean, it, you know, I would argue that that means that you need to have more, not more, not better. I don't, you know, you just need to be more focused on telling the stories better. But then again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the stories don't matter to the younger consumer that's, you know, or the general consumer that's not spending as much on, you know, retro product, where you can't really compete with the more up tempo for somebody that, you know, might be seeing something like a, I don't know, like a, an Air Devastate or Air Gone or something that's not as, you know, prominent in that whole world of basketball shoes. And then that means that by default, Nike's just like, okay, well, we can reach enough people with these, you know, kind of mass popular silhouettes, where the more, the ones that were kind of more dedicated to the sneakerhead, or the ones that sneakerheads have kind of glorified in our own minds, sit on the shelf for much longer.
But we know it's, well, I don't want to say solution, but we know how to make a shoe popular. I mean, we've seen a formula work a million times. You throw it on the most famous entertainer, have them on stage with it, photo capture it, just hot in the street. I know SDs, I mean, this is kind of a side tangent. We know back up into the front of mind of sneakerheads, but what one of the things that helped that was seeing Travis Scott and SDs more and more often. So I feel like you do that with some of these, I guess what they would call obscure basketball models that we're naming off. I feel like you would get the same result, but I guess it would take both the cosign of whatever influencer / artist and the brand to make it happen.
True.
Yeah, I think
this is in a sense of like making it, you know, oh, let's make it popular. I mean, if you want to do it the cheap, easy way, yes, I think that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's definitely, you know, a possibility that they could do that. I feel like with a lot of the, at least a lot of the stuff we're talking about is a lot of basketball stuff. So like basketball definitely, just in general, is not as popular as it was, which would be a little bit harder to sell. But I do think that, you know, like your example of Travis Scott wearing all those like crazy SBs from, you know, way back, it definitely helps bring some energy to that kind of category. But I don't know if it's enough to really like move the needle in terms of, you know, general SB dunk sales, because I think of like all the different colorways that have come out in the last year or so, there's been a lot of good dunks that have come out, and there's not that many of them that have actually sold out or been difficult or like super hyped or, you know, have crazy resale prices. There's been a handful that have, you know, I guess resold for a little bit, but for the most part, they're fairly accessible. And, you know, I don't know, maybe that's, you know, if Nike's producing more and they're selling more based, you know, on guys like Travis wearing the old stuff, then that's super dope. And if they could, you know, turn that over into, you know, basketball, then obviously that'd be super dope. I think they already kind of do that on, you know, the Jordan side of things, right? Where, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, there's just so many shoes being produced right now on the Jordan side, where like Jordan retros, we've talked about it before, there's almost unlimited colorways coming of some of these styles that, you know, I love, you know, like Jordan ones, but do I need, you know, another different colorway that's a variation of red, black, and white? No, I'm good. Like, I don't need any more of those. I mean, I like the storytelling aspects of them, and occasionally one of them will get to me. Like, I bought those, the Sports Illustrated Star is Born ones, right? Because I had that magazine, and I was like, oh, well, duh, I got to have these shoes. But I still haven't worn them, you know? So, and it's not that I don't like them. The materials are pretty dope on them, actually. They actually were pretty impressive when they showed up. But I just don't know if we can get people away from, I don't know if that trend is ready to change yet. I think it will be something, I think it has to be something even bigger than a Travis Scott, where, you know, it would be, to me, it'd be like something that's like very closely connected to basketball, like a PJ Tucker going and pulling out a bunch of crazy Nike basketball retros that could kind of start a trend in the NBA. And if the NBA, if the guys in the NBA were wearing, you know, pregame and postgame, wearing a bunch of retro Nike basketball stuff, now that might actually kind of move the needle and shift things around basketball enough to get people to pay attention to retro basketball product. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
I mean,
I got an argument with that.
I mean, now that all makes complete sense. Like, now I'm not going to go down the one wormhole, but no, I mean, that was right spot on. Sorry.
It's all good. I think, I think, you know, just going through kind of the list that you put together, though, like, Ultra Flights are one of those shoes that they should just bring them back at some point with all those crazy colors that everybody remembers. I think the 2K5s, I feel like, did the 2K5 come back at all? They didn't, huh? Maybe I'm thinking of 2K4. The 2K4 is back for a while. I thought the 2K5 did at some point.
Always comes back.
But, And now would be the perfect time for some of those crazy shock shoes to come back, right? You've got like Vince Carter's kind of last run, whatever. I mean, he might go for five more years, but every year is his last as of the last couple of years, right? So it's a great way to like plug that whole, you know, what was it, Boeing campaign?
Oh, yeah. With his commercials in his suit jumping around the, he's like walking down like a New York street or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and that had, you know, that translated over into like print ads and East Bay catalogs and all that. So, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because the other challenge now, in my opinion, around basketball shoes is that the cool factor of seeing, you know, let's say Tony Kukoc in like up-tempo 94s, something like that. That doesn't happen now because other brands have swooped in to get those like kind of, you know, second, third top players on each team. So if you don't see it, if people aren't seeing the stuff on, you know, out there on the court, how do you get enough eyes on it, enough energy behind it with kind of the, I guess, more natural marketing, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, but without it feeling forced is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Like how you get like, oh, cool. Like what is he wearing on the court? You know, you get those, you know, nice kicks on court deals. You see something really old and obscure, just kind of gets the brain going, make you go research it. Yeah. I mean, if everybody's getting smacked up by a particular brand, yeah, it's tough for you to get those moments.
Yeah.
I don't. One of the other shoes that before I go down that path, one of the things I think is really interesting is how many good retros have come out that don't seem to be selling like crazy numbers, like the Gary Paytons, right? That just came out. It seems like the even though they did like a dope Sonics colorway, and it seemed to be the materials were pretty good from the ones that I saw, but they're still like on sale, you know? And I wonder how that plays into things too, where if I'm Nike and I can make, you know, a Jordan 1 that even if it's not that great of a colorway, it'll still sell significant amount of shoes compared to, let's say, you know, any of the Jumpman line. Because I think there's a lot of those shoes that in the Jumpman line, I mean, the Jumpman Pro came back and I think it did fairly decent, but then it's also still kind of going. Wasn't there like that dual color, like one red, one blue recently? And I feel like it's way too long for that shoe to be on the market still, but I don't know. I'm probably the wrong person to even be asking about this, because I just love to see all the old stuff and I love the bulky stuff, but like I would love to see like the Fly By You up tempo come back. Even like the Viz Zoom up tempo, like all those shoes that are, you look at them now and you're like, wow, that's like a little too much. you know, and not even going back to like 80s shoes, because like the shoes from the 80s, like the Ultra Force and stuff like that, or the Court Forces from back in the day, you know, those kind of shoes I really like too. But they're at least like a kind of more, anything from the 80s I feel like has a very traditional, you know, style to it, where it kind of works and it's close enough to a Dunk or an Air Force One, Jordan One, where it's almost interchangeable, right? I know that's blasphemous to like many sneakerheads, but to the average consumer, you buy an all white, you know, Court Force Dunk Low, Jordan 1 Low, an all black of anything like that. You know, obviously with the Air Force One and the fear that comes with anybody wearing a black Air Force One, but the 90s stuff to me is very, there's just a lot of opportunity for them to bring stuff back, but I just don't know how they would actually do it in a way that, that kind of the average consumer can be a part of it and be excited about it. But.
Yeah. It probably take a lot of work and couldn't do a lot of them at one time. Yeah, you're right. When you talk about the Gary Payton sneaker, I just realized it is just kind of hanging around there. It's a great looking shoe, but it's just what I think is 140, 150, and people would, I guess, rather spend an extra 20, 10, 20 bucks on a Jordan 1, even though, you know, same kind of colors coming out, but it's just that recognition. That's what's cool right now. The Jordan 1 is, you can do no wrong with it, pretty much. And just a lot of people, I guess, now don't even probably know the history of like Gary Payton, you know, the sneaker itself, and may not even follow to do the research on it. So,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, so that's that part.
Anyone who's bought that shoe rants and raves about it, but you have to like be in the market for a Gary Payton shoe and an old leather shoe. Like, we talk about how leather is such a nice material, and we want it so bad on new shoes. But then, like, when old ones come back with it, they're in that kind of weird segment between being, like, a functional basketball shoe and being, like, too sporty for the streets in 2019.
Yeah.
It's just, you're right.
What was the last, like, retro basketball shoe you guys bought, other than a Jordan?
Mine was a LeBron 3. I mean, I don't know if you want to rate that the same kind of, that's like, because of Jordan, because I mean, I guess the popularity of it, but honestly, I see the LeBron 3 sitting on shelves everywhere now, so I think it's kind of sitting in that same category as a functional basketball shoe that people don't really want, or at least to wear in the streets.
I'm trying to think, not Kobe or LeBron, just to make it different. Air Force 180, they did a Charles Barkley Phoenix Suns colorway about like a year ago, and I bought them at the outlet for mega cheap.
Yeah, I think mine was probably Maestros, or I guess technically it's the Maestro 2 because it had that side zip thing. Just like
so hard to put on.
Just like the black and white and orange colorway. I mean, but the shoes, you know, it's so bulky compared to anything else that I'd be wearing that it's I don't know, it's really. I still have worn them plenty, but it's just one of those shoes that it's just the style doesn't seem to feel right now the way that it maybe did even just like 5-6 years ago.
For sure.
So let us know what the last shoe Nike, let's just stick with Nike retro basketball. Like, what was the last Nike basketball shoe, that retro Nike basketball product that you guys bought? Hit us up on Twitter or Instagram. Definitely like to hear like anybody's thoughts on this whole conversation around what you'd like to see retro, and if it can even make sense for the business, on the business side, for people to, you know, for the brands to you know, drop this stuff. But before we get out of here, I wanted to obviously see what you guys are looking at news wise this week. Robbie, you were drooling before we started recording, so I'm going to let you lead it off.
Yeah, I was looking at some very gorgeous, let me see here. I'm kind of losing my brain right now. Some Donovan Mitchell. I had to remind myself what the name of it was, the Dawn Issue 1 and Karl Malone colorway. They're called the Mailman. It has like the 90s throwback Utah Jazz Mountains from their uniforms on like the lateral side of the shoe, and it has little mail with a little like mail delivery icon on the side. I love that, but I also love it even more how, was it Michael Jordan or Scottie Pippen that told Karl Malone in the NBA Finals that the mail doesn't deliver on Sunday? Have you ever heard that story?
I think it was Scottie. I heard that recently, actually. I think it was Scottie, but I could be wrong.
the mail doesn't deliver on Sunday, and then Carl missed the free throw.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Scottie Pippen. It's so good, though.
Savage.
Classic.
But man, that storytelling, it's like a throwback to the, not to another Adidas player, but to the franchise. And I think he's really synonymous with the Jazz, given their small market, and he's so good. Shout out to Rudy Gobert, though. So it's just like, it's a perfect homage to Karl Malone, the mailman. What about you?
Man, I am liking this, his Nike ACG React Terra. I never say it right. Is it Gobe or Gobi? It's such a nice, one piece like booty construction, but as opposed to having that really hard ACG like midsole, it has a full React midsole that looks like the Epic React, but it has for those pieces they have like the translucent parts on the Epic React, they have really rugged thick and rubber on it. It looks super sweet. It's all black with some very very like nice hints of just purple lavender color. It's really dope.
Yeah, I like those too. The one shoe that I'm actually stoked about right now, I'm hoping that I can get a pair of, is the Air Max 90 Biotex, like the yellow, blue, purple, you know, green. Just I love almost every time. I love when like kind of more iconic colorways from, let's say, one category get put on a different, you know, completely different shoe in a different category. So, you know, like the SB or the Dunk as a Biotech, and then kind of translated over to the 90s Super Dope. So I'm curious to see if that will be popular or not. It seemed like it was reselling already, so that doesn't leave too much. Doesn't leave me with too much hope, but I did enter the raffle for it on, I think End had him up. But.
Well, Sneakers is going to have it this weekend, and apparently they're supposed to follow up with the actual retro of the Biotech Dunk. I don't know when, but sometime this year, so hopefully pretty closely to the 90s.
Yeah, that one's kind of weird because they just released it last year, right, or the year before?
Did they?
Yeah,
I've definitely seen it recently.
Yeah, it definitely came back out at some point within the last 2 years, I think. But I don't know. It's. I just like that it's different on the 90. It looks the blocking is a little bit different. Not something you see. You know, there hasn't been too many crazy colorways on the 90 either. Without, I don't know. The 90's kind of been a little bit. I don't want to say dead, but it's definitely been in a lull for the last couple of years, in my opinion. So, but
yeah,
but
before, you're not wrong.
So let us know what you guys are looking to pick up this week. If you're looking at anything at all. And as always, we appreciate you guys taking the time to listen, and we appreciate you interacting and responding back to us. So if you have any questions or suggestions or anything that sparks your interest from this episode, hit us up, let us know what you think, and that's pretty much it. So my name is Nick Engvall. You can follow me at Nick Engvall on all platforms. More importantly, just follow at Sneaker History on all platforms, and let them know where they can find you guys.
Yeah, you guys can find me, Mike Gilroy, on Sneaker History. Find me both on Instagram and Twitter at MadWatcher789. Robbie, where can they find you, bud?
You can find me at RAHBEE 702 on the interweb. Variety of places.
Right on. All right. Well, we appreciate y'all listening, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See you.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop
You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast, to continue the site, and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Hey, hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.